Indiana's 2011 General Assembly got underway this week, and already it has all the makings of a session to remember, including an improving but still tenuous fiscal outlook and two chambers controlled by a single party that's promising to deliver the most ambitious legislative agenda in decades. We hope to capture some of that excitement during this, the 30th season of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm your host, John Schwannis, pleased to be back for a 15th year. In a moment, we'll kick things off with questions for the leaders of the General Assembly's four legislative caucuses. What, besides the formulation of a two-year state budget, are their top priorities? Is there much appetite to tackle divisive, non-budgetary issues such as abortion, immigration, and same-sex marriage? And will single-party control necessarily ensure smooth sailing over the next 4 months?
Purdue Research Park. Four locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
Typically, at this point in the show, I'd set the stage for our roundtable discussion with a lengthy, and some might say meandering, preamble. This week, given that the legislative session is only a few days old and that our four guests will largely determine the General Assembly's outcome, I'm jumping right to the introductions. Joining me are House Speaker Brian Bosma, an Indianapolis Republican, House Minority Leader Pat Bauer, a South Bend Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem David Long, a Fort Wayne Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Vi Simpson, a Bloomington Democrat. And I thank you all for being here for our first show of the season.
Thanks for having me.
I want to focus primarily on issues, and I know you do too, but allow me to start with a couple quick questions about the tone of the session. I'll start with you, Brian Bosma. Ever since it became clear that you were going to be returning to the speaker's chair, you've talked a lot about bipartisanship, and you've tried to set that tone with some committee appointments and so forth. 10 minutes into the first day of the session this week, though, 10 minutes removed from the Pledge of Allegiance, there was House embroiled in partisan dispute over so-called right-to-work legislation. I don't want to debate that piece of legislation.
Sure.
What I want to do is ask you, is that an aberration or an indication of times ahead in the session?
Well, I was asked this after the what one journalist called the procedural hissy fit that happened on the floor yesterday, if that was the end of the bipartisanship initiative that I instituted, historically appointing Democrats as chairpersons, and I said no. I knew there would be resistance to this, tough old habits that are hard to break. I will pledge today on the floor to reach out to the willing and work around those who are unwilling to go forward in a bipartisan fashion and try to make this the most professional and bipartisan session that the state has seen.
Pat Bauer, your caucus, of course, is outnumbered 60 to 40, so any party line vote, and this is stating the obvious, you're going to lose, and we saw that this week with the first day of the session with some of the party line votes. What you can do, though, is take your caucus and walk off the floor and thereby deprive the House of a quorum to do business. How willing are you this session to use that weapon in your arsenal?
Well, we didn't yesterday. We tried to use the rules, which we all voted for unanimously, which do call for each bill to be called down individually by title, author, and where it was reported to committee. And when it was first accepted and then interrupted, we didn't walk off. I think that's
Are you prepared to walk off? It didn't happen.
That would be a very rare occurrence. And one time, I think the last time I was in the minority, we actually went to caucus and asked, there was 10 hours to do 126 bills. We asked for 50 bills on the list, and it never came. And actually, about 10:30, the end of the session. So we never, as you used the word, walked off. We were in caucus. I think
well,
it'll
fact,
be...
Well, 120 bills were killed that day. Through the walk-off, so
they
were resurrected,
but the history of the session's past.
Can't rewrite it at this point.
But the point is that we were in caucus, and that the answer to your question...
I just want to know if you're going to prepare to walk off the session during the session was the question.
Given the fact that there is an attempt to be bipartisan, we're certainly going to give that every chance we can as long as we can use the rules that we voted for.
All right, David Long, you don't have to worry about your counterparts in the Democratic caucus walking out because you can still conduct business, so you have a supermajority with 37 of the 50 seats. How does that affect what you'll be doing this session?
Well, we have typically a little different atmosphere in the Senate, and I think that's the way the world is. The House is always a little edgier
the Senate's more decorum-oriented and procedurally oriented, and policy wonks, if you want to call us that. They call us boring in the House, but that's...
we'll go with policy
wonks. Okay. No. But I will say that, what happened in the House, I'm sorry to hear about it. I mean, I wasn't watching the video and everything, but I think it's important for us to roll up our sleeves and get to work. I think this is procedural stuff. Moving bills to committees is, you know, that's just basic procedural issues. And as far as I'm concerned, in the Senate, we won't do that. I will also say, however, that I have great respect for Senator Simpson. I think she's an excellent leader. I think she has a terrific caucus, a lot of talented individuals there, and we treat them with the most respect, or we try to. And so there's an atmosphere in the Senate we try to conduct, and the way we conduct our business, and I think that's the way we ought to be doing it. I think that's what the people expect us to do.
Well, Vice Simpson, you've heard what your counterpart here, Senate President Pro Tem, has said. Do you feel confident that your caucus will be heard this session?
I really don't expect that this session will be much different than past sessions. In terms of our role, we will do what we always do, which is work hard, know the topics. We will be smart, and we'll represent the minority voice, and which means sometimes you have to be noisy. We'll continue to do that. We do have a good working relationship, Senator Long and I. We'll continue to lead our caucuses and do what we have to do to make sure that every voice in the state of Indiana is heard and not just the single party that now is in control of the state house.
All right, well, let's get down to the issues. We got a lot of territory to cover. What we'll do, let's take 30 seconds apiece. For those who haven't been paying attention, close attention to the caucuses and their respective priorities, we'll start with you, Brian Bosma. What are the 2, 3, 4 things that your caucus wants to accomplish?
Sure. Budget reform, budget adoption without a tax increase on Hoosier families or employers. Be tough 2005 revenues for a 2011 budget, but we're going to tighten our belt and do it. Historic education reform, giving choice, especially to families that don't have it today. The third issue will be job creation and dealing with especially the unemployment trust insurance issue that we have before us. And then drawing maps that have fair districts that are inclusive of communities of interest, and really trying to put a nonpartisan tone on that one as well. Be difficult given the tone that was set yesterday, but we're going to work hard to make it happen.
Pat Bauer, how closely do those priorities dovetail with what you want to see happen?
We think job creation is the number one thing. We lost 300,000 jobs in this state. We have a terrible dilemma. I think we have the worst fiscal crisis since the Great Depression. I think it's very difficult to pass a budget without deep cuts in our constitutional responsibilities. So I think it's going to be a magic moment if you can do it without revenue increases, but we'll support no revenue increases.
Who do you think will be coming out most bloodied in this? Because clearly all the caucuses, I think, have said they want to take tax increases off the table. They want to protect K-12 funding, which is well over 50% of the state's discretionary spending. So where does the action...
Well, I think social services are being bloody right now just by executive action.
With the cuts that were imposed during the current budget cycle.
Yes, I think that's already happening. But 60 to 65% of the budget is education, higher education, and K-12. So if you take that off the table, at least they've taken, the governor has, and I assume everybody else is taking K-12 off the table. However, a letter just came out Monday saying they're going to continue the 5% cut, which is another $300 million. For another year, so that's $300 million right there. And if you got to solve about $1 billion problem, I guess they're a third of the way there already. Social cuts, I can't give you a number on that. But it's still a lot. It's $500 million left. So,
well, David Long, how about it? We've heard a couple things that are that you have to do. Obviously, you need to have a two-year budget, or at least a budget for the coming fiscal year. Redistricting, of course. What else is on the plate for you all?
The speaker said, well, I mean, those are the big four issues that he mentioned. Unemployment insurance, hopefully we can get that moving quickly. We have to get that out the door so our employers can know what their premiums are going to be this year. And April being the sort of the month when they really, most of them come due, that's important. So we'll try to move that quickly. We'll see what happens.
And just a reminder to viewers and listeners, the state is basically in the red about $2 billion.
That's right.
They owe the federal government because, simply put, premiums have not kept pace or not do not offset
benefits.
Well,
about 40 states in the country right now are in the red and owe the federal government money. That's how it works. You borrow money when you run out. And 40 states are in that boat. We're working on a solution. We've had one in place for 2 years. We delayed the implementation of it last year. But the time's come due. We owe $60 million on September 1st in interest to the federal government on that loan. I will say, as far as the issues, though, it's important to remember with Indiana's budget, and Representative Bauer made some good points, it's going to be tough getting to a budget, a balanced budget at the end of the day. But I still think we need to remember that Indiana is in far better shape than most states. I mean, we've done a good job in managing our fiscal boat here, and that's been in a bipartisan way, I will add, but Governor Daniels has been a good, strong leader in that way. We'll get ourselves and the ship righted, I think, by 2013. We've got this bridge to get over for the next 2 years, and we will get it done without a tax increase. But getting a balanced budget there is not going to be easy. Tough choices are there, and we've all pledged to keep K-12 education flatlined. Which I think is very important. That's an important investment for our future, and we'll get that done. But it won't be easy. It's no question.
So you're glad you're not in California, where the incoming governor's facing what a $28 billion budget shortfall.
That is an implosion. I don't know why anybody would want that job, to be honest.
But the weather's nice.
Right.
Vice Simpson, how about the priorities for your caucus?
Well, we all share the same priorities. There are certain things that have to get done, and to me, the most important thing is the budget, because the budget sets the priorities for the whole state for the next 2 years. So those priorities are what we debate. And it will be interesting, I think, and difficult to put that budget together, make sure it's balanced, that there's no tax increase to the public, and that we do, our caucus will be mostly interested in protecting K-12 education and higher education. We don't think about them as separate entities. It is K-16, and that's how we have to think about it. And so we'll be doing our best to make sure that priority remains a focal point of the budget. We're also working a lot on bills having to do with more transparency, more public access to government, so that the public has information about not only the budget process itself, but also the cuts that are being made before they're made, with some rationale for how those decisions were made. So not just what the legislative body is doing, but also what the executive branch is doing, because I think the public deserves to know.
We'll stick with the budget before we move on to some of the other topics. You heard Pat Bauer say he thinks that social services will be come out big losers. He suggests already have with some of the current executive order mandated cuts. How bad is it going to be?
Well, it's going to be tremendously difficult, historically difficult, to make this budget work. I met with a large group of social service providers, and in fact, the president of a social service provider in the nonprofit sector, and indicated to them that they have to start thinking about more creative ways to meet the critical needs that they're addressing, and not just rely on a check from state government. Not to say that they're stopping, but they're not going to be increasing unless someone here is ready to propose a significant tax increase to accomplish that. So they're going to have to be creative, as BOSMA Industries for the Blind is being creative, looking for ways other than state funding to meet the critical goals that are there. And we have to give them the tools and help to do that, help them critically think in that area.
You mentioned unless somebody is willing to propose a tax increase, and nobody in any of the four of you, nobody is aware of any groundswell in your respective caucuses. I mean, that is off the table.
Not going to happen.
Yes, I agree with that. But I will say that some of the cuts are federal cuts, like the suspension of sometimes federal food stamps, and so that's not necessary. So some of those cuts were not necessary because it's a federally funded programs are being cut.
Current budget cycle is also buoyed, was it not, by what, $2.7 billion in federal stimulus dollars?
Well, that's
be
the problem.
That's what we have the future to fill gaps.
That's an additional challenge.
That's right.
All right, let's talk a couple other things that we've touched on. The budget certainly is job one, redistricting. Pat Bauer, obviously this will be a process largely controlled by Republicans. How worried are you that gerrymandering will be, which is a time-honored tradition by both parties, whoever's in control after the decennial census, how fair a process do you think that'll be?
Well, I think that's the perfect test of bipartisanship, how that map comes out. I mean, you can talk about bipartisanship, but if that map comes out in a bipartisan manner, I'll have to say he did what he first said he would do, bipartisanship. You know, I've said that the maps that were drawn twice by Democrats 20 years ago and 10 years ago had to be pretty bipartisan because we were 50-50 twice, 51-49 several times, 52-48 many times. So I don't know if he can come that close, but...
Well, let's see. I mean, David, even before the November elections, last session, beyond that, you were among those saying this needs to be a different kind of process in the future. We need to have more logical district boundaries and can't divide communities. Now that you're sitting pretty in terms of drawing these maps, what do you say to Pat Bauer?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think we can greatly improve the process just by incorporating certain rules that the U.S. Supreme Court has laid down as, they get advisory, opinions as to how you can draw good districts and make them constitutionally appropriate. We tried to incorporate those 9 points into a bill last year. It didn't make it at the end of the day, but I think we plan to follow that process in drawing our maps. You know, they have to be fair. They have to be reasonable. I think, be honest with you, I think people think they need to look good to the naked eye also. You look at the congressional districts, and I'm embarrassed by the district now Congressman Rakita has and current Congressman Pence has. You look at them, they look like two huge long brackets. That's not representative of the people. And we shouldn't draw districts like that. And we can do better. I think everyone in this room believes we probably can do better things. This year I think will be better in terms of how the maps look. I hope that it will be bipartisan. Time will tell. It's always
record,
political. It's always political.
For the record, they were drawn by that commission.
Which was controlled by...
Democrat appointee.
So it's okay, but I'm not so much.
We're Republican.
I'm not so much saying pointing fingers in this room as I am saying we can definitely do better, and we will, and we'll do it working with our Democrat colleagues in the Senate, and I'm sure the same way in the House. I hope, but it will be. It's a tough process, and it will be political. There's no question about that.
If I can add, it's my hope this is the last time it's a political process, and we will begin in the House for the Senate's consideration amendment to our Constitution. That gives the legislature the authority to establish a independent commission to draw these maps. Senator Simpson and I have both supported this concept in the House. It actually passed the House in 2005 when I was Speaker last. I was the co-author then. I'm the author of the legislation, the proposed constitutional amendment this time. And I think we need to, as we can do it better, I think we can prove we can do it better this time. It's my hope it's the last time it's done by the legislature, and it'll be done by an independent commission in the future.
Let me jump in.
All right, jump in, but do it
first
fast because we've got a few more issues and our time is short.
This is so unfair because they all got to talk. First of all, I'm embarrassed by some of the state Senate districts as well, so if there's plenty of embarrassment to go around. Communities of interest between Noblesville and Marion, for instance, just do not exist. So put that aside and say, all three of you, I'm going to give you the opportunity to support legislation that we're putting forward to allow a nonpartisan commission to draw the maps this year. You know, if it's good enough 10 years down the road, it's good enough now. And there's no reason why we can't combine our thinking processes and all of the data and information that we have and do these districts in a nonpartisan way. Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Todd Rakita had figured out a way to do it. Didn't particularly like his maps, but at least they made some sense on paper. And we can do it again, and we can do it with a nonpartisan commission, and it can be done this year. We don't have to wait 10 years from now. All of this bipartisanship and better districts, it's silly unless you put your money where your mouth is, and that's by doing it the right way this year and not waiting 10 years.
I think it's safe to say we got a sore point. You're going to not let us go
problem.
To the other issues.
There's
this
pesky
this
little
is the filibuster.
Pesky little problem called the Indiana Constitution.
No.
Which says that the legislature, just a minute, I'll let you talk. I said the legislature must draw the maps, okay?
The legislature must approve the maps. It does not say draw the maps.
I like your interpretation of it. The fact of the matter is, if you're going to do it that with a commission, you'll have to change the Constitution to do it.
That's right.
And I'm not against doing that.
That's absolutely false.
Well,
obviously, okay, hot button issue. Shame on me for going there.
I've been introducing this legislation for years. They had plenty of opportunity to go to a nonpartisan commission. for years I've been doing this, and right. and they've Let's, ignored it.
Real so, quickly, the governor's agenda. He wants to see school reform. You talked about, Brian Bosman talked about school choice, voucher systems, maybe merit pay for teachers. He also wants to see criminal code reform where judges would have more discretion with sentencing. Local government reform, which of course has been on the burner for several years now since the Kernan Commission and Shepherd Commission put together recommendations for streamlining local government. That's a lot on the plate. But we also have a lot of pent-up demand among portions of your caucuses, and I'll point more to the two gentlemen sitting here on my left, for some of the non-budgetary social issues, immigration, abortion, crackdown on abortion, same-sex marriage, constitutional amendment. Will those issues in any way derail these other topics we just talked about?
Well, you say the pent-up desires in our caucuses. I will tell you that in the House, at least, it is a bipartisan pent-up concern. Prior management artificially orchestrated the demise of these proposals, and I think you're going to see bipartisan support for those issues. Everything you've mentioned. Everything.
And
I don't know about immigration reform. Now that one gets
same-sex
same-sex
marriage.
Social issues.
We had a vote on abortion reform.
Okay. Well, whatever. So, but you'll I think you'll see these measures addressed respectfully and pass the Indiana House. What was the other?
Well, basically the notion that will these issues derail?
That'll be my job. And it's really the leader's job to be sure that these things don't derail. Don't derail the critical issues that are before us. But we can multitask. We've all said this. People say we don't have time. We've got all the time in the world to address. There'll be 1,000 bills introduced in the House. We don't have time for all those.
Our view yesterday was to support the governor trying to put aside the right-to-work bills so we can concentrate on the more important
ones. Well, you are the prior management that Brian Bosman just alluded to. How are you willing to go to the mat in terms of the walkout, which I asked you about 15, 20 minutes ago, to block some of these measures, such as same-sex marriage, constitutional amendment, and some of the abortion changes? Well, this is going to be the last question.
There may be due to deliberation, but ultimately it won't be a permanent departure. It'll be what we will deliberate and have discussion.
We have so much to do just to create jobs and get this economy going that it will be a real shame if these two gentlemen who will be leading the agenda let the real debates get derailed by some of the radical social agenda ideas by some of their caucus members.
I'll say to our viewers and listeners, you got a taste of what's to come over the next 4 months. It's going to be interesting. I thank you all for being here to kick off our discussions. Again, my guests have been House Speaker Brian Bosman, Indianapolis Republican, House Minority Leader Pat Bauer, a South Bend Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem David Long, a Fort Wayne Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Vi Simpson, a Bloomington Democrat. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, our guest will be Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels on the heels of his annual State of the State address.
To the tax burden of our fellow citizens.
And time now for an Indiana Lawmakers staple, our weekly conversation with the show's chief analyst, commentator, and prognosticator, Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter, Indiana Legislative Insight. Welcome back, Ed. Good to have you for another season. Anything about the roundtable surprise you?
That they made it through without slugging each other. I thought it was going to be a little bit calmer an event, but then again, after the first day of legislative festivities where it took about 10 minutes in the House to really degenerate, I guess we shouldn't have been surprised by today, but seriously, they handled it with some humor and aplomb, and I think that you saw a real preview of what's happening this year. You're going to have a lot of really divisive and really complicated issues to deal with, and people are just going to have to approach it with a different kind of an attitude to get through it, and to get us to April.
Well, the issues that we talked about for the most part today, the budget, some of the school reform issues, redistricting, clearly, those are divisive in and of themselves. But then you throw in perhaps some of the other issues that we alluded to, abortion rights debate, proposed constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. What do you think in terms of how successful the Senate President Pro Tem and the Speaker will be in trying to keep their caucuses and their members on course?
Well, you also have to put some of the responsibility and perhaps at some point blame on the governor as well. The governor is going to have to make it clear what he will and will not tolerate. He's done a pretty good job of that to date. He's talked about a truce on some things. He's talked about trying to keep the right to work issue from really swallowing the legislature whole here, but there are some other complicated issues that we heard the leaders talk about that are also going to be very difficult to resolve because of some deep-seated philosophical issues, including unemployment insurance and shoring up that UI trust fund. So even the kind of issues that we've come to view as the wedge issues aren't going to be the only real complicated issues that may cause some partisan strife this session.
So almost everything is a wedge issue this session, potentially.
All the key things, absolutely.
Do you see anything on the governor's agenda or otherwise being a true sticking point? If you had to identify one thing at this point that really could cause perhaps a walkout among House Democrats or something where the fur really starts to fly?
No, he just wants jobs and economic development and doesn't want anything to stand in the way of that. And I think that if you look at things on a real macro level, if they are looking for an excuse, if the minority is looking for an excuse to walk out or disrupt the proceedings, they can find one. They can find one every day. It's almost like an NFL game where if the referees wanted to call holding, they could find it on every play, but they don't. They have to exercise some restraint. I think that you'll see some of that this session as well.
Very good. We'll have to leave it there, but we look forward to seeing you and hearing from you next week. Thanks. For more information about each week's show, additional content, and contact information, go to WFYI.org/lawmakers. We look forward to hearing from you. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis. We're back again next week with Governor Mitch Daniels. Until then, take care.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.